You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. A 17-year-old boy who was reported missing for nearly 3 weeks in Juneau was located earlier this week and returned home, according to the Juneau Police Department. Michael Northern Miller was reported missing on Wednesday, March 18th, after not returning home from school. Police said he was reportedly seen in the Mendenhall Valley area the following day, but they were unable to find him. The department shared a Facebook post seeking public assistance in finding him. According to Juneau Police Deputy Chief Craig Campbell, police located Miller Monday evening after receiving an anonymous tip that he was at Fred Meyer. While not much has changed on Juneau's waterfront since the Juneau Assembly approved a tidelands lease for the development of a fifth cruise ship dock downtown last year, work has been progressing in the background. That's according to Susan Bell with Huna-Totum Corporation, the Alaska Native Village Corporation behind the project. Earlier this week, Huna-Totum and the City and Borough of Juneau finalized the tidelands lease agreement, which gives the final stamp for its development. Bell says now the corporation aims to begin construction next summer and open the dock for the 2027 cruise season.
There's still a lot of detailed engineering and design that needs to happen, and we needed to be sure that we do this sequentially. So signing the lease allows us to have confidence in moving forward with securing steel, securing the float that is needed for the dock and things.
The dock will be constructed in Gastineau Channel and paired with an upland waterfront development called Auk Landing. It's estimated to cost at least $150 million. The development was approved by the Juneau Planning Commission in 2023. It will include underground parking, retail space, and a culture and science center located along Egan Drive next to Juneau's U.S. Coast Guard station. The project garnered a lot of public attention over the past few years as the Assembly and City continue to grapple with how to best manage the growth of cruise ship tourism in town. Huna-Totum says the development would help spread out tourism's impact on the downtown area and ease vehicle congestion. However, critics argue the opposite and worry about the health impacts the ship could have on air quality. Bell says the corporation is committed to listening to the public as it moves forward with the development.
This was built on years of input, and I think Huna-Totum will continue making sure that we're continuing that dialogue and getting people's input.
Juneau's local Alaska Native corporation, Gold Belt Incorporated, is similarly proposing a new cruise ship port on the backside of Douglas Island. It officially submitted a conditional use permit application to the city in February. The project will still need approval from the Planning Commission and the Juneau Assembly. And the city of Gustavus doesn't have its own public works department, so it can't process its own septic waste. The community of less than 700 people shipped that waste to Juneau for years. But as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, that longtime practice came to an abrupt end last year. Now both cities are trying to figure out their options.
Most households and businesses in the rural community of Gustavus rely on septic systems. And for years, a private company from Juneau ferried over to pump them out. But then, the city and borough of Juneau stopped accepting septic waste from Gustavus last March due to concerns over the impacts of PFAS-contaminated sludge. PFAS are called forever chemicals since they don't break down naturally. They're toxic, known to cause severe health problems, and they're everywhere, including in human waste. High concentrations of PFAS afflict the city of Gustavus since firefighting foams containing the chemicals were sprayed at the airport, upstream from neighborhoods. Now, many people living in Gustavus worry about what to do when their septic tanks fill up, like Norma Fleek.
I don't know. I really don't have a plan for it.
She spends around half the year in Juneau and the other half in Gustavus. Before she had a septic tank installed in the 1990s, she said her family dumped waste in a large hole on the Gustavus property. She says she might have to dig another big hole if Juneau won't reconsider taking her waste.
If there are places in Gustavus that are PFAS-free, it would seem to me that at least they could allow those properties to be collected and accept that septage.
Fleek says her drinking water well has not tested high for PFAS, unlike some others in town. It was no secret that Juneau had been processing septic waste from Gustavus. It had been going on since the Alaska Marine Highway System brought ferry service there in 2011. Despite that, Juneau's engineering and public works director, Denise Koch, says she only found out about it in 2025, when the city of Gustavus began looking at long-term ways to deal with its waste stream. The contractor doing the study reached out to Juneau city staff. That's when Juneau's public works department sent a letter to the city of Gustavus telling them to stop sending their septic waste. Koch told KTOO last month that it was because Juneau's wastewater treatment plants have to comply with permits issued by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Those permits restrict toxic contamination in treated wastewater that's released back into the environment. and they require the city to conduct toxicity testing.
We know that PFAS is an emerging contaminant. We don't know if Gustavus's septage would cause a problem with those whole effluent toxicity tests.
Those tests help ensure wastewater facilities meet federal Clean Water Act standards. And PFAS tests last spring showed solids in Gustavus's septic waste did contain some forever chemicals. But Sam Dapsovich, a spokesperson at DEC, wrote in an email to KTOO that there are currently no regulatory limits on PFAS in wastewater effluent, and there's nothing in the city's permits that would prevent them from taking septic waste from Gustavus. In correspondence between Juneau City staff and DEC, which was provided to KTOO, city staff say the state gave Juneau conflicting guidance. Koch says the city is planning to meet with state environmental regulators to talk about the issue soon. Kathy Leary is the city administrator for Gustavus. She says the small town doesn't have the authority to set up its own wastewater treatment facility since it doesn't have a public works department to oversee it. So she says the town is not equipped to manage the waste on its own.
There's not a whole lot we can do short of what we were doing and maybe trying to work with Juneau and ADEC to come to terms with, you know, allowing the small amounts that we have to be injected into their system. But again, we're not there yet.
Leary says since no one is coming to pump, some residents are thinking about other ways to deal with the waste. She says some have installed elevated leach fields to try to prevent E. coli and fecal coliform from contaminating shallow drinking water wells, and others are talking about digging a hole to dump it in. But neither solution will last forever. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And a Juneau boy has now undergone a potentially life-saving treatment for a rare genetic disease after years of fundraising. Cade Jobsis just turned 5 years old, and with that birthday, he received gene therapy treatment in Dallas, Texas, a treatment that could save his life. Cade's mother, Emma Jobsis, has been raising money since 2023 through a campaign she built called Cure for Cade. The goal of the funds was to allow scientists to restart clinical trials that previously showed promising results for treating HP4 hereditary spastic paraplegia, or SPG50. Cade was born with the rare disease, which, without treatment, would gradually take away his cognitive and motor function. Cade has struggled to speak and walk. He has been in intensive physical therapy since he was 9 months old.
The hope for this drug, what the research team hopes that it does, is it stops the progression of his disease. Basically, they just kind of slowly become a shell of themselves over time. And the goal of this drug is that it stops that from happening.
Speaking on the phone from Dallas, Jobsis says there already has been damage to Cade's systems, but she doesn't yet know how much can be overcome.
In the best case scenario, this drug will bring back some of the abilities that he's already lost, but we won't know that for certain for a while. It's not something where you just flip a switch and all of a sudden everything is the same. He still has to learn the skills that he hasn't learned yet.
For now, Cade is still in Texas, recovering from the treatment, which gave him some expected flu-like symptoms. He'll travel between Juneau and Texas for follow-up appointments after the treatment, and he'll be on severe immunosuppressants for 6 months, his mom says. The treatment has shown promising results in other children with Cade's condition, but there isn't a big sample size. The treatment is still in clinical trials, which were restarted with $4 million Jobsis and other families raised. She says only 7 or 8 kids have received the treatment, so they have very limited data. But that's the point of the trials, she says.
That's what we're doing is getting the information so that hopefully the next generation of kids with this disease will be able to say we have a drug and it works and you can get it right away.
Jobsis says she's grateful for Juneau residents and businesses. In just the last 6 months, they raised more than $1 million to close the gap left by a grant that fell through. That's on top of previous local fundraising efforts. The money helped restart the trials so Cade and 3 other children with the disease could receive treatment.
We will never be able to repay our town for what they did, for the chance, the hope that they gave us, and to fight with us for Cade.
Jobsa says Cade and the family plan to return home at the end of April. She doesn't yet know exactly what the future holds for Cade, but now it's his to discover. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And leaders of the state Senate are throwing cold water on hopes for a supersized permanent fund dividend. In the State House, the Finance Committee added a roughly $3,800 dividend to the latest draft of a budget a week ago before sending it on the floor for a final debate. It would require drawing down nearly half of the state's $3 billion rainy day fund. But not so fast, says Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican who co-chairs the Senate Finance Committee on behalf of a bipartisan coalition. In the opening days of this year's legislative session, when oil prices were low, lawmakers said they'd aim for a $1,000 dividend. And Stedman says, despite a March revenue forecast projecting an extra $500 million, he'd rather direct any unexpected money towards repairing dilapidated state facilities.
We have schools that are falling apart, literally falling apart. And you have to ask yourself, do you want a school for the kids to go to, or do you want to hand them large dividend checks?
An investigation by ProPublica, KYUK, and NPR last year found the state had badly underfunded maintenance at state-owned schools and left many in disrepair. And it's unclear whether high oil prices driven by the war in Iran will hold. Oil markets dropped sharply on Wednesday on news of a two-week ceasefire, though prices are still much higher than they were before the war. Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican and the number two leader in the Senate, says the state could afford higher dividends if lawmakers and Governor Mike Dunleavy can find common ground on bills that would raise state revenue.
There are answers to these issues. We just have to have the courage to go forward with them.
Dunleavy has said he opposes new taxes without a corresponding plan to rein in state spending. Lawmakers roundly rejected a plan he proposed earlier this year as unrealistic. And Alaska Folk Festival performances continue on the main stage tonight at 6:30 at Centennial Hall, including 2026 guest artist Willie Carlisle. Carlisle comes by way of Kansas City, Missouri, and Arkansas, and previously performed at Folk Fest in 2019. He's a multi-instrumentalist blending music, storytelling, and humor to pay homage to and reinvent the folk traditions of the past. Other Thursday performers include Holy Cricket, Josh Fortenberry, and Tram Rack. Local acts, as well as artists from Fairbanks, Washington State, and California, will grace the stage. Performances start at 6:30 p.m. Listen live on KRNN 102.7 and 103.1 FM, or watch the live stream at ktoo.org/folkfest. For other shows happening around town this week, check out KXLL's Nightlife Guide. Public dances at the Juno Arts and Culture Center also start tonight at 7 p.m.